Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively at Lexington Market. We're at Fadley's. Don Moeller is here. We're going to get the Baltimore Positive. We've had some impeachment stuff. We've had crazy stuff, but it's great to have a congressman here. Thanks for coming down, having a crab cake with us here at Lexington Market. And off we go here, Don Moeller.
Congressman John Sarbanes. We also want to thank our sponsors at Jennings and State Fair and Fadley's. Congressman, I don't know if you're familiar with the group. We interviewed a couple weeks ago Sarah Heminger from a group called Thread.
Oh, yeah, I know Sarah very well.
Just doing
incredible work.
Amazing work. And we're asking every week, we're saying to people, please go to Thread's website, go to thread.org. Yeah. They're making a difference.
No, learning about what they're doing is inspirational. I've had a chance to talk with her over the years and then kind of watch from a distance the progress they made. It's they bring a whole team to bear on these kids' lives. It makes all the difference in the world.
Well, it's amazing that when we talked with Sarah, that now after 15 years, there are up over 500 young men and women.
It's amazing.
Every one of them has been successful, and none have left the program. So we're delighted that you're here. It's not surprising that you know Sarah. We joke with one another.
The good
we
haven't people had anyone, know each other. You
we
know,
haven't,
people,
we haven't met anyone yet that doesn't know her and the good work she's doing. Well, anything going on in Washington?
Not really. Let me just say about where we are. I was telling you a moment ago. So my brother-in-law, who lives in Houston, he visits maybe, you know, 3-4 times a year here. Before he even comes to our house to stay, he comes here to get his crab cake.
Absolutely.
He got to get his
fix. You know, where
all the way from Houston.
It is an amazing scene. We're here day after day. But, you know, we started Baltimore Positive a year ago as a concept. Don was finishing up his time as county executive. And just thoughts about Baltimore. No one's more Baltimore than you, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
the
roots of being here and your father. And you were sort of bred to do this. And you're in a life of doing this. But all of it has been to make Baltimore better, make Maryland better, make our area better.
No question. I love the city. The city has a vibrancy. It's got a heart to it that I think makes it exceptional. When, you know, we're biased because we're from here.
Made you late today because of traffic. So, you know,
people
are moving around.
Exactly.
That's good, though. But
do you think about all the different communities, the neighborhoods here, that Baltimore pride runs deep? You know, we feel it from top to bottom. And I think that's why this city's going to rise up. I mean, it's going to be
I love that.
A powerful center to Maryland and to this region. It has been traditionally, and it will continue to be. And the people here know that. You know, I got places like Fort McHenry in the 3rd District. Incredible resource, national treasure, history, environment, habitat. It's got it all there. What a source of pride, you know, where the Star Spangled Banner was written. And we just celebrated Defenders Day the other day. And you remember the role that Baltimore played in the War of 1812, beating back the British again. And that's going back 200 years for that source of pride. But we keep it going every single day. So, and places like this are part of it. The fact that my brother-in-law comes from Houston, and remember, they got golf crabs down there, so it's saying something that he comes here.
Right, he could get the same thing there,
right?
But not the same
exactly.
thing.
We've got the owner, Damie Hahn, just smiling away over there. She loves the Houston.
So this is an example of Baltimore institutions that make us proud of this city.
What do you think, Congressman? It's interesting Nestor starts with Baltimore and what it can be. What do you think needs to happen to get everybody together? Because the three of us and the others we have on, we all believe in this city. We believe.
I live at the Inner Harbor. I've lived in Inner Harbor for 2 decades.
Yeah. We know what it can be. We know what it's been, what it can be. We know it has challenges. What do we need to do to get everyone on the same page?
I think the key thing is to build trust across communities, between communities and political leadership, between communities and law enforcement. You know, we've had troubles over the last few years. We know there's a lot of tensions there. But the fact of the matter is, where there's tension, it shows people care. They may have different ideas about how we kind of get to the goal of making the city strong, but the fact that they care is a starting point. And I think establishing that trust, building trust among all of the different sectors here and all the different communities that exist is critical to that, and I think it's possible to do. But we need some sort of continuity of some of those key leadership positions to make that happen. I think we can get that. And then I think you'll see a lot of the kind of pent-up energy and engagement that's out there begin to be released and to benefit the city as we go forward. So Baltimore's always been a place where, you know, it's person to person, it's neighborhood to neighborhood. We have some places that are doing incredibly well. We have other places that are kind of stuck. And making sure we create opportunity in neighborhoods that may have been cut off, you know, from jobs or transportation or from some of the better education opportunities. If we can connect them to the parts of Baltimore that are on the rise every single day, then the whole city goes up. And I think that's the challenge, making those connections, building those connections, for sure.
It wasn't necessarily one of the topics we're going to look in at today, but when I hear you talk, I think about this, and that is, hearing you talk reminds me again that the Red Line was a major loss.
Huge loss.
For this region. I mean, you all had fought hard. You had the federal funding.
It was ready to go. It was all ready to go. The Red Line was going to connect, you know, the east side and the west side.
How many years of work for you? I mean, literally, I mean, just an incredible
amount of energy. Our whole delegation worked on making sure that that was a priority to get that federal partnership money. It was in and it was years. It was in place, and then boom. The boom drops and it doesn't happen. And I'll never, frankly, understand why the governor made that decision. And I'll tell you something else. That was right after the Freddie Gray protests had happened. And the city was, you know, there was a lot of turmoil here. And if we had gone forward with the Red Line, it would have sent this message of we're leaning in for Baltimore. Right? We see the future of Baltimore. We want to connect Baltimore. So it would have been a huge shot in the arm at a very critical moment for the city. Unfortunately, governor went the other way on that. You had so many projects, because I used to get briefings on this, on the east side and the west side that were ready to go. Transit-oriented development, all these things that would have
neighborhoods.
Huge economic opportunity, right? For neighborhoods that have been cut out of Baltimore's sort of emerging strength. And the Red Line would have done that. Can we get back to that? Well, I hope someday we can. You know, in the meantime, we got to come up with some workarounds because that project got pulled off, you know, the front burner. But it's an example of how if you're creative in your thinking and you put together the right kind of political leadership, you can get something teed up. Problem is, we just didn't get it done in the end. And I don't know. I don't quite understand what the governor was thinking.
Well, because the part you allude to, and Nestor and I talk about this, people think of it as improving transportation, helping people, as our friend Kevin Kamenis used to say, trying to get the choice rider on mass transportation, trying to get people from point A to point B without using a car. But you zeroed in on the other piece of the Red Line, which was the economic development and jobs all along that line that was going to build out for blocks.
Absolutely. And it's both the real impact of that economic opportunity, but also psychologically, this idea that you're investing in our city, that you want to lift up those communities. That makes a huge difference. Now, I think we can find other projects that do that kind of thing, and that's where you want sort of the political leadership, the business leadership of the city, the community leaders to step forward. Actually, Dan Rodericks had a great piece today in the paper. I don't know if you saw it about the Southwest Partnership.
Right, I did. We're having Mike on.
Yeah. Okay, so Mike is incredible. You know, this is like his ninth incarnation as a community leader.
Right.
But what he's pulling together is tapping into that Baltimore spirit that says, you know, you can't keep us down. And if you get all the people who feel that way about the city, you connect them, you put some resources behind it, the city's going to go up.
We all agree that change is sort of necessary, right? Until change comes, right? Like, the Red Line would have been a change. We say we keep doing the same thing. We need to change something. Getting people to accept that part of it has gotten it stuck to where it is. I mean, because when change is proposed, that's what feels, it feels like nothing changes because the side where we are, I don't need to tell you every day where you are, but just on a local level, yeah, that there needs to be a massive change, and that needs to be welcomed. And maybe that's where we are now. Maybe people are ready to do something different than what we've done.
Well, you gotta change to sort of keep up with the pace of the world.
Sure.
And things. But change can be hard. It can be disruptive. But if you have a good plan, if you have a strategy for it, then I think people will accept it. And that's why the red line thing was disappointing, because we did have a real plan for that, and then we just couldn't
get that timeline. It was a real shovel-ready project.
Right. And you think about all of the time and money and resources and attention and focus that went into that project. Now, like I said, I think we can assemble that same combination of energy, focus, and planning on a lot of other good things for the city. Look at what's happening around the train station. Another example of some real good master planning about what you do with a really important part of Baltimore City. And that's coming together in a very positive way. So that's just one example of something you can keep your eyes on. So that's the challenge for Baltimore. But, you know, we still have all these young people flocking in here. It's a very appealing city. They kind of like the grit of Baltimore. And
it's very bohemian in a sense.
Our challenge is we got to keep them once they come.
Right.
You know, and they get a little older and they start having kids and they need to go to school and all kinds of
stuff. That's where we got to hold on to. They have to have ownership of the city.
Exactly.
Because we've always been provincial enough to look at somebody from out of town and saying, they're from out of town, right? I mean, I think we're more welcoming about that.
They go to a couple of crab feasts and they become automatic.
Well, the fact that they want to
be
here.
We accept them. We'll give them their badge at that point.
Well, the fact that they chose to come here and they want to be here, right? And
for sure.
And we talk about this all the time. Crime, I live at the heart. Crime is the number one issue amongst citizens in the city.
Yeah.
Aside from everything that's going on with the president and everything you guys are fighting for and... But crime in our city specifically, especially after Freddie Gray, it's just something that's a daily part of my wife and I's life walking around downtown.
And that's where it's important to build that trust and that partnership between the communities and the police department. We have a new commissioner, as you know, Michael Harrison, and initial impressions, I think he's got his fingers on the pulse of what the city needs. He understands how consent decrees work because he's handled that in his previous job. And I think he is putting together and has put on paper and is beginning to implement a pretty comprehensive plan about how you kind of upgrade the way the police department works and responds to the needs and concerns of the community and is in partnership with the community. Now, the challenge for us always is, you know, we get some good people, but then maybe we can't sustain it. So I hope he stays on the job for, you know, a meaningful period of time here and can bring the sort of reforms to the police department that the community is looking for, all the while making sure that our police and our law enforcement have the respect of the community, because that's important too. I mean, it's an incredibly difficult job to be a police officer in Baltimore City. A lot of things coming at you, a lot of things to juggle. But building that partnership with the community is absolutely critical. And I think he understands that. It's part of the way he operates, his kind of view of the world, that that's what you got to do. So I'm hopeful. But look, the other part of dealing with crime, particularly petty crime, is just having a lot of people on the street. You know, having those numbers of folks. And that's where getting people to come in here to, you know, occupy these new apartments and condos that are going up and just have that sense of activity on the street every day creates a sense, more of a sense of kind of safety and togetherness. So that's important, too. So it all goes together, obviously.
Together.
And a lot of it is whether your storyline, your narrative of the city is in a kind of downward spiral, or whether you can start to flip that and move it up. And I think it's actually easier than sometimes it feels to get that kind of positive reinforcement storyline going for a place like Baltimore. But I think we can do it. Places like this help with that. And other communities, like what's happening in Southwest and other places around the city, help to support a storyline that says Baltimore's on the rise, Baltimore's on the move.
And we have a number of county executives, I think. And it's so important, whether you're talking about County Executive Reshevsky in Baltimore County, County Executive Ball in Howard County, all around the region now, County Executive Pittman in Anne Arundel, I believe County Executive Glassman. I think they understand that you can't wall the city off from the suburbs. That's not a realistic approach.
Well, the state goes as Baltimore goes, right?
No question. The third district, which I represent, you know, it's got parts of Baltimore in it. It's got parts of Baltimore County.
We're going to talk about your district.
Howard County, Anne Arundel County. Right. So I know a lot of these neighborhoods where there's this kind of, you know, relationship between the city and what surrounds it. Obviously, Baltimore County is the surrounding county. And there's no question that these other jurisdictions have a huge stake in the success of Baltimore. They're inextricably tied together.
That well enough. I mean, that when I hear someone from Bel Air or Westminster or Hereford say to me, "I'm never going back to this city because of what I saw in Fox 45," I think to myself, that's unsustainable. That is a perception and a reality that has to change.
So there's two things. There's whether you perceive whether or not you are going to go into the city yourself, whether you perceive that the health and vibrancy of Baltimore City is a factor in other places or not. I think most people appreciate that a strong, vibrant Baltimore City is good for the state of Maryland, whether or not they come in.
Whether they want to participate or not. Right?
The next challenge, though, is to get people to realize, hey, let's make Baltimore part of my daily life. You know, there's incredible assets down there, cultural institutions, the Inner Harbor, Fort McHenry. I mean, there's so much to offer here.
Incredible health care.
Yeah. So I think that people who don't live in the city can be engaged in this idea of I benefit personally and directly from what Baltimore has to offer. And there's no question that some of these political leaders that you mentioned around Baltimore, they get it. They're stepping up. They're trying to be real partners for the city because it's the right thing to do for Maryland, but also because they can see the impact it will have on their own jurisdiction if Baltimore is not strong.
Correct.
So they want to keep it strong.
Correct. Vester, I think that's a good spot to take a break. When we come back, we want to talk about how little John Sarbanes became Congressman John Sarbanes.
Do I get crab cakes after that? Hopefully I get it.
And I think we're going to have to talk about
dangling the crab cake in front of me.
Smell it. We when you come in here, you smell it.
We're going to have to talk about the I word in the second segment as well.
Congressman John Sarbanes joining us. We are at Fadley's. We're at Lexington Market doing our Baltimore Positive. Thank Don Mueller. We're back for more on WNST AM 1570 and WNST Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.